This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Second Look, the first Second Look episode of the semester. I'm Jaden Cohn. Who do I have to the right of me?
And I'm Joey Delahunty. Today we will be looking at the Los Angeles wildfires, the new TikTok ban, and a new exhibition that you may be seeing around Bloomington Normal. Wildfires continue to burn across Southern California, specifically around Los Angeles. To get a more local perspective on the matter, WZND's Courtney Conroy spoke to Jace Eustace from the American Red Cross of Illinois.
What may you guys be doing as an organization for the LA wildfires?
Yeah, so right now we know that thousands of Californians are really devastated by what we can classify as catastrophic wildfires that have really wiped out homes, mementos, and really people's livelihoods at this time. So we know that there's neighborhoods that really have been reduced to ash, and the Red Cross is there trying to provide help and hope with necessities such as food, shelter, emotional care, recovery planning, and also financial assistance as well. So right now we know that there's about as many as 550 Red Cross responders that are currently located in California that are working day and night to make sure that people are not facing this tragedy alone. We also know that as this morning, more than 560 evacuees woke up in Red Cross shelters across Southern California. So since the fire started just over a week ago now, the Red Cross has provided more than 38,000 meals and snacks with the help of our partners as well to help those that are in need.
That's fantastic. And is there anything that you guys do, like donation-wise, for recovery plans for those who were affected by the fires?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, to kind of help cover urgent expenses, the Red Cross, we really are offering financial assistance to those in the impacted households that were inside the perimeters of the wildfires. This kind of financial assistance, it kind of helps families just kind of take control of their own recovery, kind of decide what their own next steps are, kind of helping them replace whatever they decide is their highest priority, whether that be clothing, securing new housing, or any other critical needs that they might have. So it kind of lets them kind of lead the charge of what they need for their own personal recovery. We're actively reaching out to eligible individuals via email, text, phone, directly to offer that financial assistance. But if there is anybody out there that has been impacted by these fires and needs some assistance, then go online to redcross.org/get help and find some more information on that as well.
Okay, great. And because I know that you're the Central Illinois chapter, are a lot of the work efforts you guys are doing right now, are they being aimed at the wildfires? Are you still focusing just primarily on the Central Illinois chapter?
Yeah, so at the American Red Cross, essentially, when a disaster does happen, it does take resources from other region, obviously, because we're all in this together and we understand the humanitarian needs that arrive. And we just kind of saw most recently, just a couple months ago, with Hurricanes Helene and Milton. Even as we're helping in California, we're still providing long-term recovery support to those families and communities affected by the 2024 Hurricanes Helene and Milton as well. So we understand that there are resources that has to be allocated to where it's needed the most. And what we do here locally, while we still continue to support the local community as far as home fire response, as far as training services, blood drives as well, we do understand that a number of resources are allocated to help those that are actively in need in those wildfire areas right now.
Wonderful. And that's awesome that you guys are still focusing on those who are affected from Hurricane Helene and Milton and everything. I did have some family down there, so it's great to know that, you know, we can contribute somehow still being in Illinois. And with that, I just wanted to segue into, with your guys' organization, how can us, like, students-wise at Illinois State get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a number of ways that people can get involved. Obviously, we already touched on financial donations are always welcome. They go directly to help those that are affected by disasters, directly to help the Red Cross mission. But there's other ways that people can get involved as well, as far as continuing, if you do so, or if you haven't, to donate blood when you're able. What we've seen with these wildfires, obviously, in these areas, they're no longer able to collect blood because it's not top of mind. And we understand that priorities go elsewhere. And also, with winter weather that we've we've seen in other parts of the country as well. It's led to a cancellation of a bunch of blood drives as well. So when that happens, we need people that are willing and able to step up and help fill the blood drives that are actually able to continue to go on, so to make sure that we don't see any sort of blood shortage at this time. But also locally, what we would encourage people to do is to step up and volunteer. You can always go online to redcross.org/volunteer. There's a number of different positions. It doesn't have to be in disaster. We're also looking for people to be what's called blood donor ambassadors, where they just are kind of that welcoming face to get people signed into blood drives. We are looking for people on the disaster action team that kind of respond to local home fires, provide that shoulder to lean on and that assistance to people as well. But there's a number of positions that people can reach out for and start to volunteer with for the Red Cross and just try to help out in your local community.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Before we wrap things up, is there anything else you'd like to send out to the student body that we would air live?
Yeah, I would just say if anybody knows anybody that has been impacted by the wildfires and they have not been in contact with the Red Cross, they can always go online to redcross.org. They can call 1-800-RED-CROSS, get people connected. We understand that the situation is still unfolding and we want people to continue to be vigilant in that area. We want people to continue to kind of heed the warning of local officials, evacuate if you are asked to do so, and just do everything that you can to make sure that your family stays safe. And if you're looking for ways to help here at home in Illinois, you can always make that financial donation. You can always donate blood, and you can always sign up to be a Red Cross volunteer to help out as well.
As the fires continue, local fire departments are still fighting hard to contain the burns and keep them away from civilians.
At around 9 p.m. on a Saturday night, the popular social media app known as TikTok sent a message to its users saying the app is now unavailable for American users. Earlier this week, Val Garay from the WZND News team spoke to ISU's Director for Strategic Communication, Kevin Bursette, about the impact that the app's ban will have on local businesses and the community.
What sort of impact do you think that TikTok has made on college students and maybe more specifically ISU students? And you can take this, you know, maybe they're just engaging more with social media, however you want to take it. I just love to hear your opinion.
I mean, I know our team and our students, the TikTok has had a big influence, right? And the student workers that we've had are really sad to see it go. The ones I've talked to, they've been able to build up an audience. You know, so a couple of our student workers, you know, Michael Burrell is one example. He's built up kind of he's become an influencer on that format. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think he's going to be upset just because he's been able to, like, I don't know if he, I don't want to speak for him saying he will be upset, but I think he's going to lose an audience, you know, in a way to connect with people. I think people love the short form video and the way that TikTok seems to allow people to communicate really well and closely together. And the, you know, just from a practical standpoint, Instagram real editing is not nearly as easy and as good as TikTok editing.
Yeah.
You know? So TikTok makes it real easy for people to communicate, to get something out on video, short form video, in a very quick amount of time, and it makes it more immediate, you know? So I think college students are going to miss that immediacy, that audience, and like being able to like have fun and be lighthearted with, and but mix that with the logarithm, those trends, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people have a lot of fun and a lot of enjoyment just, you know, using their humor to kind of fit into TikTok's format, you know? It's definitely the place to look. Like, if you want to know, like, something happens, the quickest way to find out about it, I mean, on a university campus is look on TikTok, right? It's the most immediate news. So they're losing that. Why hasn't Instagram, why hasn't some of the American companies been able to create a product that can mirror that? That's a whole other issue, but maybe somebody can fill that gap. But I think obviously TikTok's become popular because somebody wasn't filling that need, you know, for college students, and not college students, for people in general, you know?
Right, yeah. I've spoken to a bunch of people who are saying that, you know, they're going to miss that authenticity that you get with TikTok and that sort of immediacy. And I have friends who are, like, a bit upset over that loss. So I think everyone's sort of just anxiously waiting for the final decision that the government makes, but, you know.
Yeah, I think, and can I expound on that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely.
Not just the
go ahead.
But, like, Illinois State University Police has a great account. It's really funny. They're, what they do well really fits in well with TikTok. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they've got a bigger account than we do, than the flagship account. They've got like 13,000 yeah. followers, and they do a great job. That audience dwarfs everything else they're doing. So they've really mm-hmm. been able to connect with students over that, you know? And so, I mean, brand managers. And just one last stat, I was looking at our audiences, so to kind of compare our audiences. And so our audience, 67% of our audience on TikTok is 18 to 24. Only 35% of our audience is 18 to 24 on Instagram. So obviously that's what you all want, you know? You all
right,
prefer,
yeah.
I mean, to a large degree, you all prefer TikTok now to Instagram.
Yeah, definitely.
You know? So, I mean, obviously there'll be a loss there just in terms of numbers. People, they've moved over there. That's what they like more. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I hope I answered your question, but I think talking to students will give you a better idea of how they'll personally feel about it.
Yeah, definitely. I also feel like maybe you can add to this with the flagship account. I almost feel like there's a sense that students can maybe almost connect a little bit more to the university, because when you think of a university, you think of this big institution, and then you see a TikTok account where, you know, it's students making these authentic videos and they're lighthearted, and maybe it doesn't seem as scary anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, I totally. I think that TikTok is our biggest social media channel, you know, that puts our students the most out there. And I think it does make it much less feels like you're dealing with a massive institution, right? One of the main goals of the university is to make this place feel welcoming, right? Like, mm-hmm. we take pride in being a large university that has a smaller school feel, right? And TikTok exemplifies that maybe better than some of the other social media channels. So, yeah, I definitely think it fosters that.
So, Joey, obviously, with the TikTok ban that's going around, I've heard people are going to Red Note. Do you want to mention about what that app is?
Yes. Yeah, so, Red Note is another Chinese social media app. But unlike TikTok, TikTok is the American or overseas version of a Chinese app, while Red Note is just straight up the Chinese app. So I think the interesting thing about people moving over to Red Note is that it shows an awareness of the political implications of banning TikTok, right? Like, they're not moving to Instagram or YouTube or whatever because they understand that it is about China and it is about foreign policy, and they are trying to show that we don't just disagree with this because we like TikTok, we also disagree with the politics of this.
Right.
So now we're on this even more Chinese social media app.
And I don't know how much you use TikTok, but I use TikTok for a lot of my news, mainly sports news. And that's something I'm definitely going to miss, is just finding out quick information via TikTok. I mean, I guess I could still see it on Instagram, but it's just like the endless scrolling feature that hooks you in through TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you're going to miss on TikTok?
I just think Instagram's algorithm, I think TikTok's algorithm is a lot better than a lot of these other sort of knockoffs. All of my friends who use TikTok were talking about, like, yeah, I moved to Instagram and the first three things I saw were things I saw on TikTok a week ago. So I think it's the immediacy of just how accurate their algorithm is.
Right. And then we do have our WZND TikTok that unfortunately people aren't able to go to see it and all the great content that our great social media department posts on there. But you can follow our Instagram at WZND1033, I believe, and you can see all that great content. Shout out to our social media team. But we're going to be right back here on A Second Look, 1033 WZND. Don't go anywhere.
News now on 1033 WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it, so far we've talked about the ongoing LA wildfires and the effects of the recent TikTok ban. This past Thursday, a new exhibit titled The Harlem Renaissance, As Gay as It Was Black, opened at the Bloomington Bar Jazz Upfront. The exhibit was put on by a collaboration between the local Prairie Pride Coalition and the National Stonewall Museum. I spoke to PPC Board President Dave Bentlin to learn more. So just to get started, what exactly is the Prairie Pride Coalition?
The Prairie Pride Coalition is our local LGBTQIA plus community organization. We've been based in Bloomington Normal for the past almost 30 years now, and we work on a variety of projects and activities and events. And this exhibit is part of our mission to help make the Bloomington Normal community a more welcoming, inclusive environment for LGBTQIA plus people.
So what part do y'all play in this exhibition? I know it's partially part of the Stonewalls thing, partially a Jazz Upfront thing. So what's the PPC's involvement?
We actually reached out to the National Stonewall Museum last year, expressing interest in securing one of their traveling exhibits to bring to Bloomington Normal in 2025. And we decided upon the Harlem Renaissance exhibit because it examines the Harlem Renaissance from a different perspective. Many times the Harlem Renaissance is chronicled in history books, and there is very little mention of the LGBTQIA plus influence on the Harlem Renaissance. And so we thought that this exhibit would be a good one to bring to Bloomington Normal, partly because this month is Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, and then next month is Black History Month, which would give us an opportunity to show this exhibit at a number of places and raise a bit of awareness and give people a different perspective on the history of the Harlem Renaissance.
Is this exhibition happening just this Thursday, or is it going to be sticking around for a bit?
It will be around. We have the exhibit through the end of February. And right now, the Thursday event at Jazz Up Front is our opening reception for the exhibit. And then we will have it on display in a number of locations throughout the rest of this month and all of next month. We're still finalizing a lot of those arrangements. We've had meetings with people at Illinois Wesleyan, at Illinois State, and at Heartland Community College about bringing the exhibit to their campuses. And then we also will have it on display at the Bloomington Public Library for a period of time, February 19th through the 28th. So a lot of these plans are still up in the air, but needless to say, this exhibit will be shown in multiple locations in the Bloomington Normal area.
Have y'all ever put on an event like this before?
No, Joey, to be quite honest, this is the first time we've done something quite like this. There was a time a few years ago when we brought an LGBTQ plus history legacy wall to Bloomington Normal, and we displayed it at Milner Library and on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University. That was sort of a different process, though, because that was a wall that could not be moved around easily. It was not a portable exhibit, so we were only able to stage it in two areas in the community. But this is sort of similar in that it deals with LGBTQ plus history, but I think this is a little different in that we are able to schedule a large amount of programming around the exhibit. For instance, in February, later in the month, we are going to produce with the Coalescence Theater Project a cabaret around the Harlem Renaissance. So this will be a show that will feature some of the poetry, some of the readings from plays, and some of the music from the people who were part of the queer community and also helped shape the Harlem Renaissance. So that cabaret is going to be taking place later in February, probably toward the end of the month. That's another project that we're working on and that hasn't been quite finalized yet. So this is sort of a different activity for us, but I think it's one that will help us raise some awareness and open some eyes and offer the Harlem Renaissance in a different perspective than it's often portrayed as.
So this is something new for you guys. What inspired you to sort of take the swing?
One of our board members came across the National Stonewall Museum and was aware of the traveling exhibits that are available to local organizations such as ours. And we were looking, this year is our 30th anniversary, and we were really looking for some projects that would help raise our profile in the community as well. And we thought that having something like this exhibit would really help us reach a lot of different sectors of the Bloomington Normal community and help us raise awareness and not only of the Harlem Renaissance, but of Prairie Pride Coalition and the fact that we're in our 30th year and that this is but one example of things that we're doing in the community.
And then what made Jazz Upfront the choice for the opening of this exhibit?
Again, one of our board members suggested Jazz Up Front because a lot of the Harlem Renaissance was based around jazz music. People like Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey and Ethel Waters were a part of the Harlem Renaissance, and there was a very heavy jazz influence. And we wanted to collaborate on the opening reception with Jazz Up Front because that's our local jazz outlet here in Bloomington Normal. And the owner, James Gaston, met with us, and he was very excited about it. And he and his staff are lining up some music for the opening reception. And I just think that it's a very appropriate place for us to have that opening event.
For information on where you can find the exhibit around Bloomington Normal, check out the Prairie Pride Coalition's Facebook or Instagram.
Yesterday, ISU's University Galleries hosted a sensory-friendly morning exhibition. The event featured a dim-lit and lowered stimulus for people with sensory issues, with the stated goal of allowing the galleries to be accessible to those who would usually find it overwhelming. Later that day, they opened with a new accessibility-themed exhibit, which remains on display.
Bloomington Normal's local NPR affiliate, WGLT, recently received a $20,000 grant to increase its coverage of local schools. The funds come from the Google News Initiative, with WGLT planning to increase its focus on several local districts, including ISU lab schools. The station hopes its reporting will create a better community for education.
Governor J.B. Pritzker has announced a second round of funding for the Illinois Grocery Initiative, this time aimed at helping small grocery stores improve their equipment with grants from the state. The grant is available to stores with less than 500 employees and is meant to reduce food insecurity in the state.
Bloomington has announced its annual Black History Month essay contest set to take place through the month of February. The winners of the contest will have their essays featured on WGLT, with multiple winners for different school age groups. The deadline to submit an essay is February 14th. The submission form can be found on the City of Bloomington's website.
Despite a tight budget, Normal is continuing forward on its sustainability plan. They don't have the funds to hire a sustainability coordinator as originally planned, but still have the ambitions to make Normal a more environmentally friendly place. The less cost parts of the initiative remain in motion, including expanding bike racks and pedestrian infrastructure and planting trees. ISU Sports was back in action this weekend. The men's basketball team went 1-1 this week. On Wednesday, they took on Drake University. A late foul by Dalton Banks allowed the Bulldogs to pull ahead for a 66-62 victory. The Redbirds ended their three-game losing streak in last night's 74-68 gritty win over Missouri State. Johnny Kinzinger led the team with 19 points. And Landon Rolfe recorded a double-double with 17 points and 11 rebounds. The team will be back at Secu Arena on January 21st at 7 p.m. You can listen right here on 103.3 or tune into WZND.com, where Julian Voss and I have the call at 6:50.
The women's basketball team also split this week with a victory and a loss. Last Sunday, the team fell to Drake 85-64. The Redbirds got back in the win column on Friday with a win over Valparaiso 79-65. Shannon Dowell scored 22 points, and Nevaeh Thomas had a double-double with 16 points and 12 rebounds. The team travels to the Windy City for a matchup with UIC today at 2 p.m.
The men's tennis team opened its 2025 spring season against St. Joseph University. The Redbirds fell 4-3 after taking three singles matches and one doubles match. The team will be back on the court today with a doubleheader against Marquette and Eastern Illinois at Evergreen Racquet Club.
The ISU gymnastics team earned a season high of 195.650 points to win the Windy City invite on Friday night. The Redbirds' success came from Jay Mack, who posted a 9.9 on floor, which was the high score of the night. The team will be back in action on January 24th to duel off against the NIU Huskies.
The Bloomington Bison grabbed their 17th win of their inaugural season and last night's 4-1 win over the Utah Grizzlies to extend their win streak to 4. Goals came by Eddie Matsushima, Patrick Bakov, and Connor Lockhart. The Bison look to extend their win streak to 5 and hit the ice against the Grizzlies at 3 p.m. today at Grossinger's Motors Arena.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we looked at the ongoing LA wildfires, the recent TikTok ban and its effects, and an exhibition at Bloomington's Jazz Upfront, as well as checking in on local sports. For Second Look, I'm Joey Delahunty.
And I'm Jaden Cohn. And you can listen to this episode or any of our previous ones on WZND.com under the podcast tab. Have a great week, everybody, and we will catch you back right here at noon next week.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.